from VOA Africa.
This is VOA News. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. Sources close to the investigation say the FBI conducted an unprecedented raid at former U.S. President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida Monday, seeking classified documents he may have taken with him when he left Washington last year. It is the latest indication that investigators remain focused on the former president's actions. It was Trump himself who announced the raid late Monday in a lengthy statement in which he asserted the agents had opened up a safe at his home and described their work as an unannounced raid that he likened to prosecutorial misconduct. Presidential historians, when asked about an FBI raid at a former U.S. president, say such a thing is, in fact, unprecedented. ABC Washington correspondent Saga Mirghani reports.
Southern Methodist University's Jeffrey Engel says it's one of the Trump presidency's fascinating parts.
We've had to reconsider how often we use the word unprecedented.
This fits the bill.
I'm having a hard time finding anything that breaches the scale and the importance.
Engel says the Trump administration's history keeps getting rewritten.
I remember saying when Trump was impeached that this is the first line of his biography for the rest of his life.
Now,
I don't think that's even in the first paragraph.
Sagar Mirghani, Washington.
Earlier this year, Trump turned over to the National Archives Records and Administration's office 15 boxes of documents from his presidency, which include classified papers. The National Archives notified the Justice Department about the documents. This is VOA News. U.S. President Joe Biden has signed a $280 billion bipartisan bill designed to boost domestic high-tech manufacturing. Flanked by scores of lawmakers, union officials, and local politicians and business leaders, Biden signed the legislation into law at a White House Rose Garden ceremony. The new law, a core part of his economic agenda that will incentivize investment in the American semiconductor industry in an effort to ease U.S. reliance on overseas supply chains for critical cutting-edge goods. Biden said the future of the chip industry is going to be made in America, meaning computer chips, which run everything from smartphones to computers to automobiles. The legislation set aside $52 billion specifically to bolster the U.S. computer chip sector. The measure is part of the Biden administration's push to boost U.S. competitiveness over China and ease U.S. reliance on overseas supply chains for critical cutting-edge goods. The White House says Micron has announced a $40 billion plan to boost domestic manufacturing of memory chips, among others. Powerful explosions have rocked a Russian airbase in Crimea, killing at one person and wounding several others. Associated Press correspondent Charles Diledesma has details.
Russia's defense ministry says the installation has not been shelled, but Ukrainian social networks are abuzz with speculation it was hit by Ukrainian-fired long-range missiles. Videos posted on social media sites showed sunbathers fleeing a nearby beach as huge clouds of smoke from the explosions rose over the horizon. If the base was in fact struck by the Ukrainians, it would mark the first major attack on the Russian military site on the Crimean Peninsula. I'm Charles Diledesma.
After winning 23 Grand Slam titles, U.S. tennis star Serena Williams says she's ready to step away from tennis, turning her focus to having another child and her business interests. In an essay written by Williams for Vogue magazine released Tuesday, Williams said, "I'm turning 41 this month and something's got to give." Williams wrote she does not like the word retirement and prefers to think of this stage of her life as evolving away from tennis toward other things that are important to me. Williams is playing this week in Toronto at a hardcourt tournament that leads into the U.S. Open, this year's last Grand Slam event, which begins August 29th in New York. The U.S. star has won more Grand Slam titles in the professional era than any other woman or man. Only one player, Margaret Court, collected more than her, 24, although she won a portion of hers as an amateur. Repeating the hour's top story, the FBI has conducted an unprecedented raid at former U.S. President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago estate in Florida Monday, seeking classified documents he may have taken with him when he left Washington last year. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
We hope that these elections will be better than the previous ones.
That's former President Joaquim Chissano of Mozambique, one of the international observers for Kenya's elections, on early reports indicating the polling was going well. Details coming up. Also, a bomb blast near the Somali southern coastal town of Kismayu has killed at least four people. These stories and more on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Kenyans are voting today to elect the president, members of parliament, county representatives, and other officials. VOA's Africa 54 TV managing editor Vincent Makori is in Nairobi following the situation. I asked him first how things are shaping up on election day today in Kenya.
Yes. Today is the day Kenyans decide who becomes their leader for the next 5 years. Voting for the president of the country, they're voting for their senator, they're voting for their member of parliament, they're voting for the county representative, and also they're also voting for women representatives. So it's a very important day for Kenyans because all these elections take place on the same day. We woke up early in the morning, went to polling stations just to see how things were taking shape. And one of the things that has been a source of frustration for many, many voters across the country is the delay in opening the polling stations. Most Kenyans like to wake up as early as 4 so that they can vote and go about their businesses as usual. Unfortunately, in so many polling stations, there were delays for reasons that have been given by Electoral Commission, not to the satisfaction of a majority of the people. Some people waited for 4 hours. Some waited 3 hours, some 2 hours for the ballot papers to arrive. Some of them actually have waited for like half a day. And that has caused a lot of disappointment and frustration. But on the flip side, a great number of people said the process was very smooth. Some of them, even despite the waiting, they said the process itself looked smooth. It looked like the Electoral Commission had organized itself well.
A Gallup poll today comes up with a study. It says that Kenyans are skeptical about the honesty of the elections.
You know, Kenyans always want to believe that the Electoral Commission will conduct the elections well. But of course, the experience over and over leaves them disappointed. It has always left a bad taste in their mouths. Now, when it started, it starts with the day before the election. It's announced that some critical elections will not happen in the coastal county of Mombasa, where they were supposed to elect a governor. The Electoral Commission said there will not be an election of a governor because there was a mix-up of ballot papers and the photos in the ballot papers. They canceled that and said the election for governor for that particular region will have to be held at another time. Another crucial county, Kakamega, there was a cancellation of the election of the governor for the same reason. So there was a mix-up of ballots. There were two constituencies in the northwestern part of the country. They said there are two constituencies for members of parliament where elections will not happen, again, because of some errors with the ballot papers. When such things happen on the day before the election, and then on election day, you have all these delays, it does erode the confidence of people in the Electoral Commission and the whole electoral process. Perhaps because of that, and based on the history, a poll like that of the Gallup poll may show that a great number of Kenyans do not have confidence.
The underfunded Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission, I'm sure it's under pressure to ensure a very untroubled vote. And more than 22 million people are registered to vote. And the official results must be announced within a week.
So the hope is that the results will be announced within the stipulated time. And if they notice that there's a runoff necessary, then the runoff will be done within, I think, 90 days. And then Kenyans will go back to their lives as normal. So it's the hope that within 3 days they'll announce who is the winner.
That was VOA's Africa 54 TV managing editor Vincent Makori. He was talking to me from Nairobi, Kenya. As mentioned earlier, surveys indicate Kenyans did not have a lot of faith in the honesty of their elections as they voted today for a new president in a hotly contested race, and that could spell trouble for the future no matter who wins. Paul Nantuli, a research specialist with the Center for Strategic Studies, who lived in Kenya for several years, says, "This is easily the most consequential election ever held in the country, and it's important to focus on young people to figure out what happens next."
Both candidates have invested heavily and spent a lot of money and a lot of time trying to reach and appeal to young people. At the same time, young people are the most suffer the most unemployment, you know, disproportionately, right? Upwards of about 40% in Kenya among young people. That is, it can both be a blessing as well as a curse, in the sense that if for any reason both candidates, if one of the candidates loses and perhaps refuses to accept the results, or if the election irregularities are widespread as they were in the previous elections that we've seen, then one cannot rule out the eruption of violence. And if violence erupts, then a lot of that violence will be embedded within this youth constituency. And that would be something that we've seen in previous elections in Kenya and other elections around Africa. So I think it's very, very important that the Independent Electoral and Boundaries Commission does its job diligently within its constraints, because it faces many constraints. It's very, very important that the candidates refrain from whipping up passions, especially ethnic-based passions and regional passions. And this is something that we've seen in previous elections. And it will also be incumbent on young people to ensure that they do not use social media to kind of make inflammatory statements about the different candidates, about ethnicity in Kenya, which is a general problem, as well as regional differences and circulation of fake news. So it's a critical constituency.
There's lots and lots of young unemployed Kenyans frustrated with the economy, frustrated with their inability to find a decent job, earn a decent living. Do either of the front runners, or the other candidates for that matter, offer a viable path to turning around the Kenyan economy?
Well, if you look at the campaign manifestos, the campaign platforms, I should say, of both Raila Odinga and Vice President William Ruto, those campaign platforms offer wide-ranging and far-reaching economic transformation initiatives, targeting young people, targeting the youth, and targeting women. So they're offering probably the largest welfare programs that have ever been offered or promised in an election campaign in the history of the country. Okay, so young people, the expectations have been through the roof. I was looking at just the placards that young people are carrying to the Ruto and Odinga campaigns. And it says it all. Huge expectations. Universal health care, direct cash injections for the most vulnerable, workers' compensation, preferential treatment in the awarding of tenders and major public service projects, major investments in education, and also in recruitment into the public service. So this is what both campaigns are offering. And it's very interesting. If you take the names of the campaigns off and just look at their manifestos, they're basically saying the same thing.
That's Paul Nantuli, a research specialist with the African Center for Strategic Studies. He was speaking with my colleague Carol Van Dam in Washington. Two international election observers who have plenty of experience with the voting process said Kenya's efforts looked smoother than the country's last election, despite occasional glitches. VOA's Abdul Kashir Abud caught up with former President Joaquim Chissano of Mozambique and Goodluck Jonathan of Nigeria in Westland, Nairobi. Goodluck said he hoped that the process would continue to look as good as he saw early in the day.
First, let me congratulate my good brothers and sisters from this Republic of Kenya for the election. So far, we've seen that within Nairobi and the polling stations we have witnessed, the turnout appears good. the process is going on smoothly. We've not observed any infractions. We pray that it should continue in this spirit till the end of the voting.
And with some delays, any delays you have seen anywhere?
No significant delays yet that can affect the elections. Yes, that is from the few places we have observed. There may be some infractions in other places. Listening to the media, somebody has been arrested with a cutlass and things like that. But we have no witness sources seen. And we pray that we continue in that spirit.
So the readiness and preparedness of IEBC, how do you judge it compared to other African countries?
I think I'm impressed with what I have seen. I'm quite impressed with what I've seen. I've been involved in a number of elections. I can say they have tried in terms of preparation. But most cases in elections, the beginning may look smooth, but later in the day things may change. We only pray that what we have observed now should continue till the tallying, correlation and tallying of results.
Former Mozambique President Joaquim Chissano said he observed a delayed start at one polling station, but noted the country's effort to ensure a free and fair election.
Well, the first observation was that we found big line of people waiting to enter the center, coming from two different senses, from north-south, south-north, and converging at the gate. We arrived half an hour before 6, and the gates were still closed, and voting material was not yet here. So the ballot papers were not here. The presiding officers were not here. We found some clerks, and the material started arriving at exactly 6 o'clock when the minibuses came with all materials and the personnel. Then some agents of the candidates also started converging.
So you have been covering elections. With the preparation and what you observed, do you think it's going to be a fair election?
Well, not only from what I'm observing here, but from what we heard from the presidential candidates, because we did not see the other candidates. And from what we heard from the Independent Electoral Commission, I think that the handicaps, the problems which they have mentioned will be overtaken, and they are confident. And we believe, so we hope that these elections will be better than the previous ones.
Concern remains about possible violence erupting as counting begins, with a close race expected between the top two contenders. In recent years, Kenya has seen an increase in food insecurity, which was worsened by the impact of Russia's invasion of Ukraine. The United States provides nearly $255 million in humanitarian and development assistance to meet emergency needs amid unprecedented drought and a dire food crisis in Kenya. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi has the details.
According to USAID, communities in Kenya's arid and semi-arid counties are being hit hardest by the drought, with farmers losing up to 70% of their crops and at least 2.4 million livestock deaths reported in May. Both are significant sources of food and income. Many families have yet to fully recover from the devastating effects of the COVID-19 pandemic and other climatic shocks before Russia's war on Ukraine exacerbated the hunger crisis with a rise in food, fuel, and fertilizer prices. The U.S. is providing nearly $235 million in additional humanitarian assistance to meet urgent needs for more than 1.1 million people across Kenya. However, more funding will be needed to help prevent significant loss of life and to meet expected humanitarian needs well into 2023. USAID is urging the international community to join in scaling up assistance to save lives in Kenya. Daniel Resnick is a fellow at the International Food Policy Research Institute. She cited climate change as a major contributor to food insecurity in Kenya. Please add actuality number one, Resnick. Resnick also pointed to the fallout of Russia's invasion of Ukraine on food insecurity in Kenya. She said, Almost 47% of Kenya's wheat and 45% of edible oils are imported, so their prices have jumped, while prices of fertilizer, which Kenya depends on, have gone up globally by about 30% since January. She said in the short term, because of the elections in Kenya, the government has a variety of mitigating measures. Please add actuality number two, Resnick. Michael Petrick is a senior advisor in the Global Food Security Office at the State Department. He said, while the U.S. has been providing aid to Kenya, the Russian invasion of Ukraine...
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. And please note, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Authorities in Somalia say bomb blasts near the southern coastal town of Kismayu killed at least 4 people and wounded 11 others. Separately, Somali authorities say the U.S. launched an airstrike in central Somalia in support of counter-terrorism operations, as Mohamed Daisen reports from Mogadishu, Somalia.
One of the bomb blasts targeted a minibus carrying civilians in the village of Bolhaji, on the outskirts of Kismayu, the administration capital of the southern Somali state of Jubaland, resulting in multiple casualties. A police officer in the port city of Kismayu, who spoke with VOA on condition of anonymity because he is not authorized to speak to media, said the attacks involved multiple land explosions and killed more than 4 people. He said more than 11 others were wounded and taken to Kismayu hospitals for treatment. Medical sources told VOA that some of the wounded have life-threatening injuries. Residents told VOA that after the first explosion that hit the minibus, rescuers who were trying to reach the site were hurt when the second explosion went off. Authorities blamed Al-Qaeda-linked Islamist group Al-Shabaab for the attack, but no one has yet to claim responsibility. Kismayo is a major port city located 500 kilometers south of Mogadishu. Meanwhile, Somali officials said U.S. forces launched an airstrike at the request of the Somali federal government in the central Hiiraan region. There was no U.S. confirmation. Government officials say the airstrike was conducted in defense of Somali National Army forces, who at the time were conducting counter-terrorism operations in the region. According to a short statement issued by Somali authorities, there were no civilians harmed in the incident, and the United States continues to support its Somali partners. Mohamed Daisene, VOA News, Mogadishu, Somalia.
5 southern African countries, with more than half the continent's elephants, are conducting a first-ever aerial census to determine the elephant population and better protect them. Light aircraft will fly simultaneously across the plains of Angola, Botswana, Namibia, Zambia, and Zimbabwe in an exercise that will run until October 20th. Mokandisi Dube reports from Habrone, Botswana.
The elephant population survey will be carried out across the vast landscape of a conservation area known as the Kavango Zambezi Transfrontier Conservation Area, KAZA. KAZA is home to an estimated 220,000 elephants, and the 5 countries are keen to know the exact figures and the animals' distribution patterns. More than 130,000 of the animals are found in Botswana, which has the world's largest elephant population. Botswana's National Parks and Wildlife Director, Kabelo Sinyatso, says the population count will be key in the management of the elephants.
The data primarily will be used to guide decision-making by the 5 partner states that comprise KAZA. We manage a number of interventions that depend on an understanding of the resource. This includes, among others, land use planning. We manage human-elephant conflict. We've got off-take programs, including through trophy hunting. We've got community-based as well as private sector-led tourism enterprises that rely on elephants.
Sinyatso says the exercise is critical for a region with a high number of transboundary elephants.
And so it's important that as the managers of the resource, we have a clear understanding of where they are and how they're distributed across the landscape. So it's an exciting project, the first of its kind, and then we expect the data and the patterns to be analyzed starting early 2023, such that by quarter one of 2023, we would already be having some preliminary data that we can share with the public as well as use for our decision-making.
CASA's Executive Director Nyambe Nyambe says the elephant count will determine a scientific approach to the management of elephant populations.
It is highly anticipated that it will generate science-based information on the population distribution and other factors, and is a reaffirmation of the CASA Partners Test commitment to the joint pursuit of science-led conservation supported by accurate and reliable data. The results from this survey will become the cornerstone for the long-term protection management of Africa's largest transboundary elephant population.
Botswana-based conservationist Map Ives says revealing the elephant migration patterns across the five countries' borders is key.
You know, we hope to see what the results come up with, but what we'd be interested in seeing is maybe not only how many elephants there are, but the distribution thereof. And what is the likelihood of those elephants moving between countries, that is Zimbabwe, Namibia, Angola, and Zambia. We know that these populations are basically one single contiguous population.
While elephant populations are increasing in the CASA region, elsewhere on the continent, the numbers are decreasing due to loss of habitat and poaching. Mqondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
The French news agency AFP, citing a security source, says extremists are suspected of killing 10 civilians, including four security auxiliaries in northern Burkina Faso yesterday. Six civilians and four members of the Volunteers for the Defense of the Fatherland Auxiliary Force, VDP, died in an attack in Sima in Yatenga province. Another security official said the assailants withdrew after reinforcements and air support arrived. A member of the VDP confirmed the attack but gave no toll, saying several volunteers are listed as missing. The landlocked Sahel state is wrestling with a seven-year-old extremist insurgency that has claimed thousands of lives and driven some 2 million people from their homes. More than 40% of the country is no longer under government control, according to official figures. Set up in December 2019, the VDP comprises civilian volunteers who are given 2 weeks military training and then work alongside the army, typically carrying out surveillance, information gathering, or escort duties. In June, military commanders said the VDP would be reorganized to integrate into the military and security structure to fight terrorism. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiya Suhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Nelson Lopes, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays,